Yes, my friends, my name is Joshua Luke Smith, and this is The Main Event. It's a podcast where we're discovering the life we long for, hidden in the life we have. I'm sharing with you my reflections and meditations on that theme that have been, I don't know, coming together over the last few years. And so if you want to dive in a little deeper to some of these themes, I'm writing every single week some poetic reflections, some essays, and that goes out to the subscribers who have joined the community. You can join at joshualukesmith.com. You get a free mug with your subscription. I talk about it every week, but it's a beautiful ceramic mug. You can go on my socials or on the website to check it out. I love there's people all around the world sipping their morning coffee, being reminded that this is The Main Event. So I'm really excited about that. You can sign up and you can join our online gatherings. You can get a bunch of new music exclusively, merch discounts, and you can ultimately help me sustain doing this podcast. So if you've been appreciating it the last couple weeks, then I'd love to have you join us there. This next episode is called When It's Too Bad to Be True. And we're exploring the realities of a world that is drenched in suffering. The music that is running beneath the words I'm sharing is by my friends Air, who are just a phenomenal duo creating this cinematic, emotive soundscape that you're hearing. You can find out more about them in the links I've shared in the description of this episode. So check them out and give them a follow. But without further ado, this is When It's Too Bad to Be True. There's no distance like that of a hospital hallway. The corridors stretch out beyond any quantifiable measurement of space. I remember standing outside the children's ICU, waiting to meet a grieving family in the wake of their child's devastating diagnosis. I saw them walking towards me as if we were miles apart. Time moves slower in places like that. It may have been minutes, but it felt impossible for them to reach me. The air felt humid with pain, thick with tension, pulled tighter than the knot in my stomach. The parents of the girl had aged overnight. They looked old and weary, the personification of a broken heart. And her sisters looked vacant, overwhelmed with information their young minds could not process. We often say something is too good to be true. But what about when the news is too bad to be true? And yet, somehow, impossibly, despite all our flailing and fighting against it, immovably and unbelievably, it remains true. I'm not sure if they shrunk or if somehow I grew larger, but I found myself wrapping my arms around all of them. We wept in that hallway, which stretched beyond and behind us like the Mississippi, passing through the lives of all that stood upon its banks. There's nothing like hearing a grown man whimper, and there's no cry like the sound of anguish escaping into the air through the lungs of a bereft mother. Their sister and daughter lay only a few feet away in a room surrounded by other children with clipboards at the end of their beds, families forcing smiles that mask distress, and nurses like angels amongst us, tending to those small bodies that should have been climbing up trees with full hearts and scraped knees. I flew 4,000 miles for a few hours to be at the bedside of one of my closest friends during her final days. I remember hearing the sound of her breathing, aided and amplified by the machine that stood faithfully and stoically by her bed. It's not common for you to hear the breath of another. It's an experience reserved for the most intimate of human interactions. It's the child with their face buried into your neck, or the lover with their skin pressed against your own. When I think back to that moment, standing in that sterile room thousands of miles from home, underneath the unforgiving fluorescent lights, all I can remember is how much I loved her. Such a deep awareness of affection confronts me when I think back to it, that I could begin weeping now as I speak to you. It strikes me as significant that it was in that state of absolute stillness, absent of any action or progress, evidence of achievement or productivity, that my love for her was so evident. It's as if being reduced to breath brings us back to our most beloved state. It's not that we become more lovable, but realize why we are lovable in the first place. The Hebrew creation story describes God crafting humanity from the dust before breathing life into our lungs with a kiss. Our first awareness of being then was the inhaling of affection and the exhale of assurance. Everything else, any other means of defining or securing our being loved, is a footnote to that reality. Or, as the Franciscan sage Brennan Manning describes, an illusion. God loves us because God, by definition, is love. God created us in love, and it is in that love we live and move and have our being. Unlike much of our experience with one another, our being loved by God has absolutely nothing to do with what we do, but is entirely rooted in who we are. The Hebrews, so caught in reverence and awe, referred to God with a sound rather than a defining name, fearful that they would limit the limitless one with language. They used the phrase Yahweh, representative of our breathing, a constant reminder that we exist within God's being, not separate from it or beyond it. So we can escape from God's love and sustaining presence as much as a fish can from water. My friend, brilliant scholar, Daisy Connell, once put it like this to me. In Exodus, God introduces himself to Moses as I am who I am. That I am statement comes from the Hebrew verb yacheh, which means to be, but it also means to become or to come to pass. The tense that it is in is imperfect, which is understood as a tense of incomplete past, present, or future action. God's being is not situated in a singular past moment, but dwelling in a constant, persistent state of being. So here God says to Moses, I am being who I am being. And this is the call in our lives, to dwell in a state of our being, which is defined in its very essence as being loved. And behold the one who dwells in his state of being, which in its very essence is love. In every moment, we cannot exist outside of being loved because we dwell in the midst of the one who is love and who calls us his beloved. My friend lay in that hospital for a week after I'd flown home, and then she breathed one final breath of beloved air. Sometimes bad news seems too bad to be true, and yet, somehow, it still is. Thinking back to those strange and disorientating days, despite the authentic presence of grief amongst us, I can't deny the sense of something transcendent that hung in the air. Suffering has a way of waking us up. The Apostle Paul prayed, "May the eyes of my heart be enlightened." I can't help but think that when we are faced with our mortality and the life we grasp so tightly escaping through our clenched fingers, we are awoken like a sharp and frozen breeze that brushes across your face in the morning, causing you to gasp silently and appreciate the simple truth that despite the night that's been, you're really, truly here. I sometimes wish I could say that in that state of bewilderment and pain, I dared to abandon my faith and walk out on the God who could dare exist at the same time a young mother could die of cancer. But in all honesty, I yearned for God. Perhaps not the God I had previously believed in, the God defined by how I determined my life should turn out, with all my insurance type of contractual assurances placed upon him. I yearned for a God that I'd heard about but never had the courage to get to know. I pined for the God who isn't afraid of hospital hallways, the God who promised to be with the brokenhearted, the God who in Jesus stood before the crowds and declared, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." The God who doesn't avoid our questions, but minds the wounded heart that cowers behind the mind that asks them. I suppose I knew then, like all who have suffered a loss, that what I didn't need was an explanation, an answer, or a definitive reason for her death. There are many valuable, robust, and satisfying responses to the questions of our suffering. Still, I knew any intellectual effort to make sense of the pain would only fall like gasoline on the fire of my rage and a genuine awareness of the injustice of it all. Now, what I needed then was presence. It was the arms that stretched beyond me and around that family outside the ICU. It was comfort. Despite our significant advancements, we are simple beings. We'll only ever need what we've always needed. We need warmth and water, a nourishing meal and a place to sleep. We need tenderness and care, someone to help convince us of our own belonging. We need people because we need the tangible, incarnated, fleshly evidence of God, the God who loves you. It's hard to believe in God when you refuse to see the proof of His existence in the ordinary ways that He reveals Himself. There's an irony in the defiant claim that if God existed, He would be with me when I needed Him most, spoken from the sufferer to the friend who has shown up time and time again. God isn't an abstract or an idea. God is a person, a very real person who loves you. The universe doesn't love you. I know you've heard it does, but it's not true. It doesn't care for you and it cannot save you. Perhaps we have been persuaded by its impossibility, its vastness and its beauty. Suppose, like all great works of art, we have become so enamored by simply being in its presence that we forget we gaze upon canvas and not creator. The gods of our forefathers were fashioned out of the skies, the burning ball of fire above them, the halo of light that adorns the dark, and yet, for all their eminence, these gods are dying. Our sun is terminally ill. The greatest minds give her a little over 8 billion more years to live. It's almost time to call the family. We found solace and solidarity in ascribing divinity to something created because our yearning for God is a yearning for a God with us, as if somewhere in our soul we know that a God absent from us is no God at all. I suppose this is why the story of Jesus still means so much to me. The prophet of old said his name would be Emmanuel, which means God with us, and for the life of me, I cannot fathom better news. He is the God of the people. He is the God who abandoned the vanity and the glory of Olympus. He is the God with birthmarks, ingrown hairs, torture wounds, and eyes that have seen too much. He is the God who loves you, cares for you, and can save you. Save you from what? Save you from it all. From self-loathing and self-sufficiency. From those cycles of fear and shame and control. From sin and the inevitable death that it brings. From a life void of meaning that grasps for hope like someone drowning gasps for air. I am not an apologist nor a theologian, but I have led the funeral for a child whose coffin was so small her father carried it under his arm whilst her mother cried with such force she couldn't catch her breath. So don't waste yours trying to convince me that we don't need salvation. Either our suffering disproves there is a God who is with us, or it magnifies our need for it all to be true. I've gone all in on the latter. I'm willing to risk believing in the most beautiful story ever told, which is no risk at all when you think about it. When my children ask me why I still believe someday, I'll quote Lewis and say that I grew old enough to believe in fairy tales again, that I realize what I yearn for even more than answers to all my questions was presence. I longed for company, and I found a God who wasn't too proud to be seen with me. I'll tell them that many of our days here are troubled. There'll be more trips to the ICU, funerals, and phone calls that leave you speechless. But standing in the rubble of it all, there is a presence. When you least expect it, but most need it, you'll see the God with working class hands, rebuilding, doing the work of restoration, placing bricks upon bricks, wiping the sweat from his brow. And if you listen, you do have to learn to listen, you'll hear these words fall from his lips. Behold, I'm making all things new.